you might end up having a pea shooter for that one. Let's go out on a limb, Tony, and say that Ohio State beats Santa Barbara on Friday.
Oh, yeah, that's really coming out of the limb.
Bong, bong, bong. Good morning.
He persevered and won against his little hex that he had on the team, but
I have to play this thing with my mind, not my heart. And my mind said the Celtics will win Game 6 tonight. The Lakers dominate, and they win 89-67.
I love you, Dave. I really do, but you suck at bets.
Good morning, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the Big Friday show as we begin another day here on the Dave in the City podcast, brought to you by Locked to the Week Radio. I'm Dave Medina, your host, coming to you again from West LA, where it is calmer and cooler, and we hope to give you another good show here today. So, I've been gone a few days, and the reason I've been gone is because I've been sick. I've been really fighting this nasty stomach virus, and I'm still fighting it now, really. I mean, it's been rough. Tuesday night, it was really terrible. I couldn't even move. I felt my absolute worst. I was really just hoping that I'd be alive the next day. I really didn't feel good at all. I barely could eat anything. I had to struggle to eat a bowl of oatmeal squares. The cereal. It's good cereal, but I had such a tough time just eating that. It was not a fruitful night for me that night. Wednesday wasn't a ton better. I felt a little bit better. I ended up going to my day job at the office at UCLA. I felt okay. And then, you know, it was just never completely going away. And then especially with my stomach, it just, like, any kind of pressure I put on my stomach, it just got worse and worse. And it just seems to be so bloated right now. I don't even know where it's coming from. I didn't eat very much the last couple of days. So, you know, it seemed like it was getting better towards the end of the day. I came home. I felt like maybe I had the courage to eat something different. I had a spicy Italian sub from Subway, and then that didn't really work either. It just got worse. It was just really starting to flare up, like nuclear war inside of my stomach. It was just really, really rough on the inside. I mean, I was okay enough to do laundry on Wednesday night. I was okay to talk with people and everything, but I was definitely wearing out. I was really wearing out. And then Thursday, I had to stay in bed most of the day. I didn't even go to work. I emailed in sick. I was just lying in the bed most of the day, and I caught some sports there. And that brings us to tonight, where the biggest subject of the day, I think, is the NBA draft. And not a whole lot to bring up there, but I'll go over some of the things that I didn't get to talk about over the last week. But we welcome you here in the city, Locks of the Week Radio. It's great to have you here. One other thing I want to tell you about. I am sending a demo of clips I've done from the show to Sirius XM Radio New York City. And the premise is that their sports talk radio station, known as Mad Dog Radio, is accepting demo CDs as a means to audition people to do a series of fill-in shows. So there'd be a three-hour fill-in show on several weekends and within a month. And during each of those fill-in shows, they would fly you right in from wherever you're living into New York, do the show, and then you can go back. It would be on a weekend, so they wouldn't interrupt your regular schedule. And personally, I think that's tremendous. I think that's a great idea, a great contest venture. It's very creative. It's very ambitious. And if you want to sign up for yourself, I would suggest you go to Sirius.com/Mad Dog Radio. That's MADDOG radio. And fill out the application and affidavit. Create your own 5-minute CD and send it in, because they are encouraging a little bit of creativity and excellence in sports broadcasting. And God knows we need a little bit of that nowadays. You know, you look at the airwaves on the radio today with sports broadcasters, and some of it barely passes. You know what I mean? I mean, you've heard it. It's clear. But point be told, it's a great idea, and I'm glad that they set it up. So I'm going to enter it myself, see what they think of this weirdness we do on our show, And if you want to join in, join us at daveinthecity.podbean.com, and we would like to hear from you. So that's what's happening with me. That's what's happening with my health. That's about it for now. But in sports, lots of big stories this week. And, you know, the funny thing is very little of it has to do with baseball. You know, and that just goes to point out that Interleague Baseball has really worn out its welcome. And I am telling you, it's just been played. You know, how many times do we need to see the Yankees play the Diamondbacks, or how many times do we need the Orioles play the Mets? I mean, how many times do we see this? It's just, it's not that interesting to me anymore. I mean, it's great when it was new. Like, whoa, I never seen AL team meet an NL team. Never seen it. But now we've seen it. And it's just not that interesting to me. And I'd rather we just go back to being the way it was, have the National League play the National League, American League play the American League, and then in the All-Star game, they can all square off. And if you want to keep it a situation where it decides home field advantage, fine. That's fine. I mean, it's not the end of the world. But Interleague, it's ridiculous. I mean, the games really don't count. You know, when you're trying to figure out how to rate one team over another team, and while granted you have play-in games and tiebreakers and that thing, I honestly don't understand how it helps a team. You know, there's the bragging rights, and there's the novelty of it, and there is the entertainment value. But the problem is these games don't really attribute to anything. You're not playing against other opponents in your division. You're not playing against other people within your league. And usually when you need to decide who's a contender for a wild card spot or who's a contender for a division, you need to know the records within the division and within the wild card. I'm sorry, when within the league in order to see which teams do what. And so, if you're not playing if you're not playing games within the league, it reduces your sample size, and then you end up with just bad. You don't have enough of a basis on which to better yourself, or to at least show a little bit of clarity. So it's almost like you're putting an extra exhibition season in the middle of the season. That's how I've interpreted it lately. It's just not impressive to me. So interleague play is happening. And although I've said this, I do think that there will always come a few matchups that are going to transcend these things and find themselves very interesting. And one of those series, I think, was the Colorado Rockies playing the Boston Red Sox. Another one was Tampa Bay, one of the hottest teams in the AL East, playing the leader of the division, the San Diego Padres. And yet another such series is coming up this weekend, where the Dodgers are going to come home reeling after a terrible road trip and play the New York Yankees in a renewal of their ongoing spat between each other. Now, normally this spat has taken place in the World Series, but they've played a few regular season games over the last decade, and they've all been pretty good. So it's a proving ground. It's going to be fun to watch this series. I don't really know what to make of it. The Dodgers have been playing so badly. Their pitching rotation really isn't that good. The Yankees have some holes in their bullpen. The bullpen's just not very good, especially middle relief. Their lineup is fine, but obviously they have their own issues. Their fundamentals isn't the best. So this series, who knows what's going to happen? It could go either way. But it's going to be fun. I mean, I know people are Yankee fans. I know people are Dodger fans. Just the smack talk between the two are going to be great to watch. That'll be fun. So that's what's coming up. Now let's get into what happened. What happened is, let's get to the meat of it, the NBA draft. Now, I was hoping for some trades and things like that. They did trade. The Hornets did trade to get the number 11 pick to get Cole Aldrich. And what they traded pieces to the Oklahoma City Thunder to do it. Cole Aldrich is the center for the Kansas Jayhawks. You know, I don't know if he's the most athletic of guys, but he's a big guy, and he's probably what you would call a bruiser banger type. He's been basically the cornerstone of the Kansas Jayhawks, offensively, defensively, what you have you. And, you know, probably a good pick. I just think the only problem is I don't know why he was picked so high. It just seemed like he was picked too high in the draft, but maybe I'm simply underrating his value. I just didn't think he was that worth the number 11 overall pick in the draft. It just seems strange. But I'm always going to have a knock against big guys getting high draft picks, and the proof's in the pudding on that one. You know, think of it this way. The thing about bigs in the NBA draft the last, let's say, 13 years, I haven't really seen very many of them pan out. You know, Blake Griffin's a great example of that. Greg Oden is another great example. Both of them missed entire seasons before they could even play. They didn't even play a single game. They had to miss an extra year after getting drafted before they could play a game. So, forgive me if my thought of bigs has been colored by the recent history. It just doesn't make me very impressed. So, with that, I feel like that the Hornets may have overspent on Cole Aldrich, and who knows how good he'll be. It's just hard to say. And let's see. The Timberwolves shipped the pick to the Portland Trailblazers for Martell Webster, or perhaps it's Corey Webster, or perhaps it's another, perhaps it's Webster from TV, who knows. Pritchard is out as GM in Portland, an unrelated note. And most importantly, the best trade of draft day was a trade that happened before the actual draft. And this is where the Chicago Bulls sent Kurt Heinrich and the 17th pick to the Wizards, basically as a means to clear out cap room. Now, the deal's not official yet. It's going to be pending a date of July. It's pending the date of July the, I think it's July the 8th or July the 1st. And the reason why it's waiting for that is because that is the date when the Wizards can absorb contracts for the salary cap. But if this falls through, the Bulls have a backup plan, and that backup plan was to go with the Sacramento Kings. So this is big-time news. Now, David Aldridge brings us the report. It was reported by various sources, but I'm going to go with Aldridge's report. I trust the man. He's a good broadcaster. He's a good reporter. And basically what it does is it's saying that with the two trades, the deal will clear Heinrich's $9 million salary off the Bulls' salary cap for next season and the $1.3 million in guaranteed first-year money they would have had to pay the first-round pick. So basically, their payroll is reduced to $22.8 million. That's for the whole team. And if the salary cap is what it's supposed to be, $56.1 million, this is again according to David Aldridge of TNT, then the Bulls, in theory, should be able to sign two maximum salaried free agents starting in July. This is huge news. Now, again, it's going to take some time for this to be consummated. We don't know if this is going to hold because no official agreement has actually been set. It can't actually officially take place until the Wizards are in position to absorb the contract. And that point in time is not for a while. Again, it's in July. So, assuming that does go down, though, you have a big roadblock in the way of the Knicks' courtship of LeBron. Because the Knicks' big trading chip, or let's say that their bargaining chip through it all, was that they had the ability to sign two max free agents. But the problem is, assuming that all goes well and that, in fact, the Bulls are under the cap after this deal, the Bulls will also have room for two max free agents. And they have a team around this. Now, we don't know what they're going to do to clear more space. I'm not even sure if they're even going to keep Joakim Noah. But let's say they do. They have Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Luol Deng, and some other guys. Altogether, that's a pretty solid foundation to add a big free agent. Just one. But they can add two. So you have two spots plus those guys, or two spots plus Rubble. Who are you going to pick? If you're LeBron and you were faced with that choice, with those two teams, And if you just look at it on a basketball level, again, two spots plus Chicago and a good supporting cast, or two free spots and rubble and New York City, it's going to be a much tougher decision for LeBron. It's not a cut-and-dried decision anymore. But it is the Bulls. The Bulls are notoriously cheap, and they're notoriously inept with their front office decisions. There is no telling how they could possibly botch this up, but they can. It's been done. It has very much been done. So we will see about that one. I mean, that's the biggest story of the draft. It's not even the draft itself. That's the funny thing about it. So LeBron James is going to now be faced with a big decision. And then you hear about Miami clearing out room for three max players, but they got absolutely nothing. They got less than rubble. They got like an empty slate. And three players does not make a team. You know, even the big three wasn't enough to complete a team in Boston. Big three isn't good enough. You got to have big three plus some other, plus a 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You know, you need other players to make this thing work. So we are faced with a very interesting offseason so far in the NBA. This is going to be fun. But yeah, LeBron James and his choices are going to be interesting ones. You know, we just don't know exactly what we have. And there's one other thing I want to say about the Bulls, but I liked it. I like this move. I think this is great. Now, whether this will be enough to make them commit to LeBron James or not, it's hard to say. And let's not forget about the Clippers, who are out west, who have that max free agent spot too, and an equally as good, if not possibly better, supporting cast to work with. But it's the Clippers, so they're always second banana. I doubt that's going to happen anyway, and most people do as well. But I haven't completely ruled it out. That's crazy, though, isn't it? So now you have basically four teams that can vie for the same guy. And the difference is, and what makes it so ironic, and this is the point I wanted to get to, the thing that's so ironic about this move today is that it puts the Bulls in position to do the same thing the Knicks were going to do, except it took them a lot less effort, and they didn't completely tank seasons in the process. That's what's amazing about this. The Knicks had basically written off 2008. They wrote off 2009, and here they're writing off 2010, all for the purpose of getting LeBron James. They've sacrificed all these seasons in order to do so. I mean, that is unbelievable. The Bulls basically swiped the carpet from under the Knicks and basically accomplished the same thing in basically less time. It is unbelievable. Truly amazing work being done by the Bulls. And I just think that's really funny. You know, I mean, the irony of it. You can only imagine how the Knicks fans must be feeling today. And then they draft a bunch of know-nothings that can't play defense in the draft. It's just too delicious not to enjoy. But I feel bad for Knicks fans today. You know, they were willing to put off the Knicks for so long with hope that maybe things would turn around. And just when it looked like they were going to do it, all these other teams clear out their cap space too. It's like, we can do the same thing you do, and we do it better than you do it. You got to feel for the Knicks. You got to feel for them. But that's just a classic case of be careful what you wish for. A cautionary tale of trying not to put all your eggs in one basket. Unfortunately, that's what the Knicks completely did. And they are hurting today. Now, can they get these guys? Maybe they can. And again, the Bulls are notorious for fouling up good situations. There's just no telling how this is going to go. But it ain't good. You know, this isn't good news for the Knicks. This doesn't help. I think that's the bottom line. They just got more options for the proposed LeBron. You can rile up any celebrity you want on your panel, but when you get at the end of the day, you're looking at it on the court, the Bulls have a better situation than you do. It's as simple as that. Simple as that. They've got a great point guard. They've got a good, effort-worthy you know, four. They've got a good four. Size, you know, it could be better. But they've got people to work with. Shooting, okay, maybe they don't really have the shooting, but that's part of what you can do with those two free spots. You know, it's just looking like the Bulls are in a good position right now. It's just the crazy thing. It's really crazy. And then the Heat, well, they got the spots. That's really all they have. Fair enough. Clippers have a situation. So three other teams are have basically the same situation you do, and perhaps superior situations to you. Now, Miami would be the only one where I think, well, it really isn't that great of a situation. Wade will probably still be there, so you got Wade. But I don't think LeBron is going to Miami anyway, so we can just rule him out. The reason is, why would you want to share a spotlight with Dwayne Wade? You already were the man in Cleveland, and I do think that counts for something. Winning is important, but you want to have a hand in it, too. It's like saying, well, you know, I could win if I go on the bench of the 2009 Yankees and, you know, have three at-bats the whole season. I won, but I didn't really contribute that much. That's kind of the thing that you're feeling here. So that's what we have as far as pre-draft. The draft was this. All right, now this is going to get boring. Top 10, John Wall, number 1 with the Wizards, Evan Turner, number 2 with the Sixers, Derek Favors. This is the one that was interesting to me because I wasn't sure if the Nets were going to commit. They did. The Nets went with Derek Favors from Georgia Tech. Good move by the Nets, I think. So the Nets have a lot of high draft picks that they just used up. And by the way, the Nets, another team that could sign a max contract. I mean, LeBron has got a lot of choices. His menu just went from like In-N-Out style menu to the Cheesecake Factory menu. He's got a bunch of choices now he can make. In fact, his head will spin with all the possible situations, including stay with his current team, the Cleveland Cavs. So many choices that he can take. And now, anyway, moving on with the draft, 4 was Wesley Johnson, Minnesota Timberwolves, DeMarcus Cousins. I like this one. DeMarcus Cousins, the nice, feisty forward from Kentucky. Very talented guy. Going to the Sacramento Kings. Great pick. And the rest of this is going to get a little hazy. Ekpe Udoh goes to the Golden State Warriors with their newly unveiled logo. I like the logo. And he's from Baylor. Greg Monroe goes to the Detroit Pistons. Al-Farouq Aminu from Wake Forest will go to the Los Angeles Clippers. Never heard of the guy, so I have no idea how good he is. He's from Wake Forest. Gordon Hayward goes to the Jazz and, in my opinion, drafted way too high. Way, 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 way too high. You know, the Jazz commitment to whiteness is getting a little out of hand nowadays. And it's like, come on, you got the 9th pick in the draft. This is what you come up with? And this is disappointing because they've had good drafts in the past. You know, they drafted Darren Williams out of Illinois. They drafted Carlos Boozer. No, actually, maybe they traded for Boozer. But they have Carlos Boozer. They've drafted good players. Even Andre Kirilenko. But here I think they were reaching. I mean, you can draft good players, but this was a reach. This is a reach. They're drafting a guy based on his, quote, basketball IQ, whatever ambiguous quality that is, and his run in the NCAA tournament. It's ridiculous. That was a reach. You could have drafted Gordon Hayward at 17th, 19th, 21st. This guy is so overrated right now. I mean, I would have been less offended if they had gone after Tyler Hansbrough with the 9th pick, which obviously wouldn't have made sense because Hansbrough was, you know, was the number one college player in basketball at one point in time with North Carolina. It just didn't make sense to me. So I didn't really care for that. Paul George, not familiar with him. He's from Fresno State. Goes to the Indiana Pacers, number 10. Number 11, Cole Aldrich with the New Orleans Hornets. Well, they do need a shot blocker, so I think that was a good pick by the Hornets. I don't know if they really needed to overspend the way they did to get him. Like I said, we mentioned that earlier in the podcast. I'm not really sure if that was worth it. But it does address their needs because they couldn't rely on Tyson Chandler anymore. The guy was just a glass statue. So off with him, on with Cole Aldrich. I think it's good. Xavier Henry, drafted number 12th by the Memphis Grizzlies. Number 13, Ed Davis, forward from North Carolina, which means nothing because I have no idea who he is. And then, it just gets worse and worse. You know, Patrick Patterson, drafted 14th by Houston. Larry Sanders, drafted 15th by the Bucks. And on and on and on and on. One interesting note, though, on the local level, the Lakers got their pick, and it was in the second round. And with it, they drafted a guy that actually could end up being pretty decent. They got Devin Ebanks from West Virginia. And if you remember what Ebanks is basically, you know, a good defensive stopper, an effective shooter. That's what the NBA draft scouting report says. He's basically like a replacement for Trevor Ariza. You know, an energy guy, good defender. You could play probably a 3, maybe a 4, 6'8". This is pretty much what the Lakers, what pretty much works with into Lakers' hands. I mean, we want the defensive guy. This is going to be a good guy. He'll be all around the court, hopefully. And perhaps he can pan out in the NBA. I mean, good calculated risk by Mitch Kupchak. Kupchak's drafts have been usually pretty good. He's had bombs, but his drafts have been pretty good. I mean, this is a second-round pick, number 43, Devin Ebanks. I mean, at least it's a guy that you're familiar with. It's a guy that's played in big-time competition. He plays in the Big East. This is a good guy. It's a good pick. I like it. What can I say? I like the pick. And if it doesn't pan out, well, you only wasted like a couple million. Man, I mean, I didn't think we were going to get anything out of this draft. Devin Ebanks. Can't argue with it. Pretty good. And let's see. The Clippers have anything in the second round? Let's look at this. I'd love to see. The Clippers did not, but the Kings did. Hassan Whiteside, center for Marshall. No idea how that's going to turn out. Armon Johnson for the Blazers. Continuing on. Just rolling through this as we go. Nothing really of note. The Suns got Gani LaWall. I have no idea how he's going to turn out. And, you know, let's see. And the Spurs got Ryan Richards, a forward from Spain, what they call an aggressive scorer. They do need scorers in the Spurs, so, you know, if the scouting reports are holed up, maybe he'll be a good shot. Ah, Clippers. Willie Warren, a guard from Oklahoma. Current teammate of Blake Griffin at Oklahoma. That's his only claim to fame. Not a good draft, Clips. Sorry, buddies. You did not do good in the second round. But the first round, you know, no telling how that man is going to work out. Not familiar with the man, I've got to be honest, but we'll see. So, NBA draft, that's what happened. That was a big story of today. The stories of the past week, we detail as such. Well, the biggest story as far as the United States, I mean the USA as a whole, Landon Donovan's Hail Mary goal off a rebound in the 91st minute, something like that, in the World Cup. Basically, it's what amounted to an elimination game, final game of the round robin, against Algeria. And they were basically dead. It was 0-0. 0-0! And it was basically the end of the game. They were in extra. They were into stoppage time. And one final push, because Algeria was starting to get tired, and there was a breakaway, and there was a shot. It goes off the goalkeeper. But then there's Landon Donovan, ever experienced as he is, swooping in, and tapping the ball into the goal. And everybody from around the country went crazy. Crazy! I mean, we were going nuts. We're getting bonkers for this. It saved Team USA season. What an incredible comeback. What a way to save the season. What a way to win the group, despite not getting a win until that game. But amazing. I mean, just absolutely amazing. And further amazing, although the Team USA did not get a win up until that Algeria game, they also were unbeaten. England and the USA face a draw. Same situation occurred with Slovenia. And then that was a very controversial one. There was a third goal scored by the U.S. that was disallowed. They never really conclusively determined what the foul or violation was. And that was a rough one. So they didn't come out with the right intensity, I don't think, in that game. It was rough. They didn't have the effort. They didn't put the pressure on until late. But then again, they were down like 2-0 in that game, if I recall. Maybe 2-1. And it took another miracle then just to tie it up. That was actually a bigger win than we realized. That was a bigger draw than we realized. And again, Team USA should have probably been a winner in that game, which would have rendered the Algeria game useless, certainly. But still, that was terrible. I mean, the referee did not have a good ruling. FIFA was not happy with it. They wanted an investigation of the official, and as far as I know, the official is not refereeing anymore. And good out of FIFA, I think, in that case. But FIFA took forever to get that figured out. So the Team USA, unbeaten throughout the first round, they'd never got a win until that Donovan goal. And obviously, USA holds on to win 1-0 in South Africa. What an amazing moment for this country. It did have a little bit of that feel of like when Team USA beat Canada in the NHL in that first game in I don't know what round it was, but in the Winter Olympics. It had that feel of, well, I don't know if you'd go so far to say it was a miracle on ice, but it sure felt like a miracle. I mean, 91st minute, you're in extra time in soccer. The referees could blow the whistle at any moment, despite what they say. You know, whether you got 10 minutes, you got 6 minutes of stoppage time when, you know, who knows? I mean, they just blow it when they feel like blowing it. And to get that goal in that situation, team desperate as they are, if they don't get that goal, it's over. They're done. So they go from being completely eliminated to winning the group. They won the group. That's what's amazing about this. They went through all that and then they won the group. Unreal. And Slovenia is particularly bitter about this because without those 2 points or 3 points, then it is in all likelihood Slovenia could have been one of the ones that advance. Incredible. Although I think Slovenia played England in that game too. So it's hard to say. Yeah, but I think they would have advanced. Because again, without the 2 points, 3 points for the Team USA, England has 5, Slovenia has 4, Algeria would have had more, but then who knows. Anyway, that's incredible. What a day that was for Team USA. And that is really the big deal about the World Cup right now. It is so fascinating. It's just incredible, man. I was so stoked about that more than anything in this tournament so far. Team USA has been very inspirational, and, you know, it almost completely folded. That's what's so remarkable about it. It almost completely dissipated. Unbelievable what transpired there. Rest of the World Cup, well, your usuals happened. Brazil's winning. Germany's winning. But the big surprise is, how about your two finalists from the last World Cup? France and Italy, both of them out in the first round. That's incredible. Not surprising for France. Not at all. Because Les Bleus, as they call them, they're just falling apart. They're really just, they barely resemble the team they had before. Zidane obviously retired. And onward, it just wasn't that great of a team to begin with. So, not entirely surprising. Italy, they lost one of their big guys during one of the friendlies, if you remember. But even so, they should have been good enough to get out of the first round. That's a disappointment. And it is amazing what happened in today's match against Slovakia. Holy cow. I mean, that was a bomb. They had a bomb of a game today. You know, going down 2-0 to Slovakia. And then trying at the end to catch up. And then having a goal that was disallowed because of an offside call, which was questionable. Very questionable. In fact, maybe it shouldn't have been offside. I mean, it was close. And that was probably not worth calling offside. But, you know, Italy dug their own grave on this one. They have nobody to blame but themselves. They can't say the injuries. You should be good enough to beat Slovakia. It's ridiculous. You won the World Cup 4 years ago. You know? I can't even imagine it. Anyway, so that's what happened there in the World Cup. And final note of things that happened this week that are significant. A tennis match record for the ages, but a match that is less so. And by that I mean we're talking about John Isner and a guy by the name of Hamut facing each other and going 138 games in the fifth set. So in the fifth set, it ended 70-68. It took 3 days to play. And John Isner wound up on top. And he did it basically by holding serve the whole match. And so did Hamut for the longest time. He holds serve. The other guy dominates on serve. The first guy dominates on serve. Hamut dominates on serve. Isner dominates on serve. Serve, 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 serve. Not terribly impressive. I mean, if you can't even break a serve in that long of a time, it takes that long to break a serve. And nobody really ever did. It was just the reason why I think Isner won is just because Hamut just got tired and started making unforced errors, made his own mistakes. It was not an impressive tennis match by any stretch. It just got dull. We knew it was going to happen. Here's another serve. Here we go. Oh, this guy's not going to hold his serve. He can't put it away. Neither team could put the other guy away. It was not exactly a display of greatness. So, you know, the record was fascinating. The fact that it went that long is incredible. But the match itself really wasn't that great. And it was a first-round match, and Isner won, but man, he's going to get blown out in the next round. It is not even close. He could go down to straight sets. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, he's tired anyway, but he's going to go down to straight sets, man. He's just not that good. That's the thing. It was really more, and the fact that it went that long seemed to be more of an act of incompetence more than it was a sign of greatness. And that seems like a mean thing to say, but watch the match. It was obvious. Anyhow, that was Wimbledon. The most interesting thing about Wimbledon so far. Although, if you recall, Roger Federer was down two sets already out of the box. But he fought all the way back to win in five, and he survives. That's great. Now, I do believe Nadal is still fighting. I do believe that Federer is still in it. And we are hopefully going to see a little bit more of both of these guys the rest of the tournament. Good thing. But Wimbledon, having its ups and downs so far this year. And, you know, it's looking interesting. So, that sums up our week in sports. That sums up the city. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week. Thanks for bearing with me. I'm glad to be through most of the sickness. Hope you have a good weekend, everyone. And we will see you next time.